Chapter 62. On the 24th, Sean left by train for Pietermaritzburg. Dirk came back from the station with Ada to his old room in the cottage on Protea Street. That night Mary lay awake and listened to him cry for his father. Only a thin wooden partition separated them. Ada's cottage had not been designed as a workshop and hostel for her girls. She had solved the problem by enclosing the wide back veranda and dividing it into cubicles each large enough to hold a bed, a cupboard, and a washstand. One of these was Mary's, and tonight Dirk was in the cubicle next to hers. For an hour she lay and listened to him weep, praying quietly that he would exhaust himself and fall asleep. Twice she thought he had done so, but each time, after a silence of only a few minutes, the tear-muffled sobs started again. Each of them drove needles of physical pain deep into her chest, so that she lay rigid in her bed, with her fists clenched until they ached. Dirk had become the central theme of her existence. He was the one bright tower in the desolation. She loved him with obsessive devotion, for he was so beautiful, so young and clean and straight. She loved the feel of his skin and the springy silk of his hair. When she looked at Dirk, her own face did not matter. Her own scarred ruin of a face did not matter. The months she had been separated from him had been an agony and a dark, lonely time. But now he was back, and once again he needed her comfort. She slipped from her bed and stood taut with her love, her whole attitude portraying her compassion. The moonlight that filtered in through the mosquito-screened window treated her with the same compassion. It toned down the mottled cicatrice that coarsened the planes of her face, and it showed them as they might have been. Her 20-year-old body, beneath the thin nightgown, was slender but fully breasted, innocent of the marks that marred her face. A young body, a soft body clad in moon-luminous white like that of an angel. Dirk sobbed again, and she went to him. "Dirk," she whispered, as she knelt beside his bed. "Dirk, please don't cry. Please, my darling." Dirk gulped explosively and rolled away from her, folding his arms across his face. "Shh, my darling, it's all right now." She began to stroke his hair. Her touch evoked a fresh outburst of grief from him, liquid, choking grief that spluttered and throbbed in the darkness. "Oh, Dirk, please." And she went into his bed. The sheets were warm and moist where he had lain. She gathered him, held his hot body to her bosom, and began to rock him in her arms. Her own loneliness at last overwhelmed her. Her voice took on a husky quality as she whispered to him. She strained to him, her need growing much greater than his. One last convulsive sob, and Dirk was silent. She felt the tension go out of his back and out of his hard, round buttocks that were pressed into her stomach. Straining him even closer, her fingers moved down across his cheek to caress his throat. Dirk turned towards her, turning within the circle of her arms. She felt his chest heave and subside as he sighed, and his voice stifled with misery.
He doesn't love me. He went away and left me.
"I love you, Dirk," she whispered. "I love you. We all love you, darling." And she kissed his eyes and his cheeks and his mouth. The taste of his tears was hot salt. Dirk sighed again and bowed his head until it was on her bosom. She felt his face nuzzling into the softness, and her hands went to the back of his head and drew it closer. "Dirkie," her voice dried up in the strange new heat within her. In the morning, Dirk woke slowly, but with a feeling of wonder. He lay a while and thought about it, unable at first to place the formless, shimmering sense of well-being that possessed him. Then he heard Mary moving about behind the partition of her cubicle, the gurgle and splash of water poured from jug to basin, the rustle of cloth. Finally, the sound of her door softly opened and closed, and her steps moving away towards the kitchen. The events of the previous evening came back to him, crisp and stark in every detail, not fully understood, but looming large to overshadow all else in his mind. He threw the sheets aside, and lifted himself on both elbows, drew up his nightshirt, and contemplated his body as though he had never seen it before. He heard footsteps approaching. Quickly he covered himself, pulled the bedclothes over, and feigned sleep. Mary came in quietly and placed a cup of coffee with a rusk in the saucer on the bedside table. Dirk opened his eyes and looked at her. "You're awake," she said.
"Yes."
"Dirk," she started, and then she blushed. It mottled the puckered skin of her cheeks. Her voice fell to a whisper, scratchy with her shame.
You mustn't tell anybody. You must forget about what happened."
Dirk did not reply.
"Promise me, Dirkie, please promise me."
He nodded slowly, not trusting himself to speak. His throat filled with a knowledge of domination over her.
"It was wrong, Dirkie. It was a terrible thing. We mustn't even think about it again."
She walked to the door.
"Mary?"
"Yes?" She stopped without turning, her whole body poised like a bird on the point of flight.
"I won't tell anyone. If you come again tonight."
"No," she hissed violently.
"Then I'll tell Granny."
"No, oh, Dirkie, you wouldn't." She was beside the bed now, kneeling, reaching for his hand.
"You mustn't, you mustn't. You promised me."
"Will you come?" he asked softly. She peered into his face, into the serene perfection of warm brown skin and green eyes, with the black silk of his hair curling onto the forehead.
"I can't. It's a terrible, terrible thing that we did."
"Then I'll tell," he said. She stood up and walked slowly out of the cubicle, her shoulders slumped forward in the attitude of surrender.
He knew she would come.